Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Benjamin Williamson, who is currently appearing at the historic Oslo Theater in a production of 4,000 Miles. This is a very interesting and thought-provoking interview. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. Finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being all that you really are. That is, having access to all of your talents, your skills, your intuitions, your fantasies, your ways of being in the world. It is my belief, understanding, and experience as a psychotherapist that so many of us come out of childhood having left behind important pieces of ourselves, talents we might have explored and used and benefited from, instincts, ways of being that were natural to us but which we had to squash, pretend not to exist, to deny. This can happen, and quite often does happen, in our family of origin, but it can also happen in our schools, it can happen with our playmates, it can happen in our culture. That is to say that something about us doesn't fit. Something about us is not in sync with either what others want or what others are. Something that is natural to us doesn't seem natural to others around us, and their good opinion of us, their appreciation of us, is so important that we would rather do away with this quality, this idea, this way of being, than sacrifice their good opinion. This is the challenge of childhood. We must do so much in childhood. We must learn to walk and talk and use our hands so we can use a fork and a spoon and a knife. We must learn good behavior from bad behavior. We must learn not to touch the hot stuff. But the most important thing that we must do in our childhood is make sure that those people on whom our life depends, those giants we call our parents, like us and want to keep us around. And even if you've had that experience in your family of origin, if you go off to a school where you unfortunately have a teacher who doesn't like the way you laugh or eat or dress or answer questions or don't answer questions, and you are teased or embarrassed or punished even, these are extremely good reasons for beginning to, first of all, doubt ourselves. First of all, think that there's something wrong with us. And second of all, to try and do away with that thing, which is bringing the response we don't want. So in my practice, of course, which, by the way, is all on the telephone these days, so much of the work that I do is about recovering, rediscovering, getting access to that stuff which we had to leave behind. Because when you have to deny something about yourself, it doesn't actually go away. It's still there, and a part of us knows that, and we feel off balance, out of sync, not quite right. It's not a good feeling. And on the other hand, to get access to all of who you are is a terrific feeling. So that's what my work is about in this show. In this show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you listen to these people, you can hear what it means, what it feels like, what it is to be who you really are. People who make their living or their life with an art in our culture are people who must do it. They have no choice. We make it so difficult for artists in our culture. So the people who do it are in sync with themselves. We call it in the therapy biz, we call it being congruent. What you are is what you are. What you see is what you get. What you get is what's actually there. And my interview today is no exception. This is with Benjamin Williamson. And Ben's story is interesting because he didn't start out saying, oh, actor, I have to be an actor. It evolved for him. And at every step, he moved towards it, sensing that there was something there for him. It's a really interesting story about how somebody discovers themselves and then finally embraces it and runs with it, or as Ben says, chases it. It's a lovely story from a very thoughtful, very reflective, very interesting, and very talented man. So here, Benjamin Williamson.
Okay, I am here with Benjamin Williamson, who is a really extraordinary actor, and who is also a third-year student at the Oslo Conservatory for Actor Training.
Satellite school from FSU.
I can't see Benjamin in other desert cities, and that is really a shame because he was wonderful. And he was wonderful in Aliens last year, which I saw, and you can't see him do that either. But you can come and see him do 4,000 Miles, in which he is also wonderful. Okay, so I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that you are currently making your life and hoping to make your living with the art of acting.
Yeah.
Good. So I only ask one question.
Okay.
And that is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when acting, performing, stories, having people pay attention to you, any of that happened? The first moment, not when you decided you wanted to be an actor, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when I was a little kid, my favorite movie was Singing in the Rain. And there was something about those two guys, Gene Kelly and...
Donald O'Connor.
That it just blew me away, I guess. Yeah, no, I wanted to be able to sing and dance just like them.
How old?
Maybe six-ish. And I still watch the movie from time to time, not as frequently as I used to, because it's one of those things that has such a impact on my life that if you watch something like that too often, it kind of burns out. For me, it loses the value. And that comes with a lot of things, quality, I guess, over quantity.
Okay, so do you remember how you saw it the first time?
Holy cow.
What?
This is just a memory that my grandma, I don't know if this is how I saw it, but I just remembered this and I have to tell you.
Yeah.
My grandmother had a room in this house in Maryland with tapes. Hundreds of tapes and one chair, this big lazy boy chair. And I remember that sometimes who knew what my parents were doing, or my sister, but I would plop myself in there and watch movies. I remember watching Bedknobs and Broomsticks for the first time in there on a tape, because she had recorded or taped all of these movies. And I don't know if that's why, that just transported to that moment,
mm-hmm.
or just that moment in time. I don't know.
So are you saying you would visit Grandma?
Then? Yeah, I would visit her.
But the family would go and visit her, or you would
visit? No, the family would. Don't you get mad at me because I used to slurp my cereal? But I think Singing in the Rain, I don't remember when I saw it or how I saw it. I don't think it was in the theater. I remember seeing like Pinocchio in the movie theater with my great aunt. But I think that it had a very big effect on me. And that song, you know, Make 'em Laugh, for me was just, I mean, watching a guy, it's almost all in one take. I think it's the whole scene is done in like four shots.
Really?
Yeah. And if you watch that, I mean, nowadays you go opposite, you know, over the shoulder shots, all these film things, these tricks and ways to make it more artistic or whatever. But if you do a long shot like that and you're watching this guy singing or just even mouthing it and dancing, he's just...
And it's all that stuff with the...
It's unbelievable.
With the planks of wood.
Yeah, we're slapping and we're dancing. Right. And that's all in one take if you watch that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And, you know, Gene Kelly was a perfectionist, too. You know, I remember reading this, that he really was a perfectionist. All of his dances, he had to hit them, you know, perfect. You know, I don't know. For some reason, that movie really hit me hard. And I watched it a couple of days ago just because it just makes me feel so good. There have been other moments in the past that I've realized that I wanted to do what I do, but...
Wait. Okay, so we have you here as a boy, and you see this thing, and you want to do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you do anything about it? I mean, do you say, I want to take dancing lessons or singing lessons, or do you sing in the car?
Yeah, I think, I was always singing and dancing to make a fool of myself and playing dress-up and doing what I could. I think my mom, I don't know what year this was, prior or post, but she put me, I was in Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat as a little kid, and I remember they have this film of me. As I walk off stage, I walk off, and then I come back on, and I wave to everybody, and then I exit again. You know, I just loved it.
How
I
old
loved,
is Lil? Guess.
I'm going to say six again.
Amazing.
Six or seven,
amazing.
Or young, or five.
Okay, and where was this performance?
I think this might have been at a church, but I knew that my mom wanted me to go into it, and so she threw me into it.
Why did she want you to go into it?
I don't know. I don't know.
How interesting. You didn't
say, I think she just saw something in me to just want to do it. And it didn't mean that much to me either. Because I also played sports, too. There was just something about being in that community and creating something from an imagination. And just dancing and singing was just something that was really beautiful to me.
Okay, so elementary school, junior high school, are you in plays? Is there a drama class?
You're like bringing me back here. This is like, you're doing this. I think, okay, so I didn't go to like a performing arts middle school or high school. Middle school, I was kind of just more of a social person. I tried to make people laugh. I tried to get, you know, good grades as much as I could. I was more about friends and life and getting out of the house and girls, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until high school... I took an acting class when I was a junior, and we worked on monologues, and we read, and I gained something from that, but I gained it in more of a kind of technical standpoint, and also being able to stand up in front of people and do a monologue was the first time that I ever did that. But also, a major thing that happened in my young years, I guess, is that there was a talent show that they always auditioned for MCs. So these MCs would audition, and then they would host and write skits, you know, in between all the acts.
This is in school?
This was in high school, yeah. And I remember my dad brought me God, I must have been in fifth grade. We snuck in. We snuck in to see the talent show, the seniors. And I remember this skit, and I don't think I've ever told anybody this other than my dad who remembers, but I watched these people in a very interesting light. The stage was like amber. The house was like foggy and kind of like old smelling, and the curtain was drawn, and I remember there was a lot of teachers in the audience, and there was just laughter. We walked into pitch black, amber, red laughter, and one of the students on stage was auctioning off a melon, and they gave this melon to a teacher, and I for some reason, just smiled. I mean, I thought it was so great. So when it came around to, you know, audition for the talent show, I didn't audition. But when it came to being an MC, I said, you know, I saw what they did the year before, and I thought to myself, what an amazing experience it would be. And they did take seniors. So my junior year, a bunch of my other friends auditioned as well. My best friends, Teddy Myers and Cole Moore, and also a really great friend of ours, Katie Pittman. And we all made it as juniors. And it was a big deal, and people didn't, you know, I got some interesting comments from seniors passing by saying that, you know, I was a joke and stuff like that.
And who did you think you were?
I thought that I was going to have a
blast. That's the kind of thing that the seniors were saying, that, you know, yeah. Who did you think you were?
Yeah, so. Right, there was a, who do you think you are, because this is our thing. And we had a blast. We spent every day after school writing skits and performing them and making each other laugh, and it went over like gangbusters. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And the next year, seniors, we did it again, the four of us. And we incorporated, the thing was, we were writing about high school stuff, we were making fun of people, we were, you know, in a very great way, we were adding teachers in, we were including the principal, we were, you know, it was just an all-around what theater is. It's write what you know. That's what Shakespeare did, that's what Chekhov did, and for me, not knowing it at the time, that's what it was all about, making things happen. And, you know, I just got lost in it. I got lost in that, and that's... I kind of just couldn't stop from there on.
So, are you saying that that was when you decided that this is what you wanted to do? Is that what I got lost in it means?
I've been chasing this feeling, I think. And I don't know even if that's it, but that's why I think that I pride myself on being as natural and I think sometimes eccentric, or I don't know what. I don't know what I do, but I don't know. I think it's from the people that I've met in the past that has fueled my perspective on life and what I want to share with theater. I think that moment I made this stupid skit that my friends know about. It was called the Burger King skit. And I sang this song about a Burger King employee, because Burger King was right down the road from our school, and a certain demographic was always there at Burger King, and I always found that to be very interesting, and I would sit, and sometimes I was quiet and just watched, and, you know, and underneath it all, I was making a lot of jokes in my head, and there was this song that we created, and I sang, and I got completely lost in this character that I had created with my friends, and we could never get through it without laughing. And I kind of woke up on stage after doing this song, and everybody in the audience was so crystal clear and laughing, and I spot my parents, and I spot these other older people, and I spot other parents of other friends of mine that I never would see smile, you know, because I just didn't see them in that, you know, light ever. And I got lost. I got lost in this thing. So I've been kind of chasing that kind of, and what's so great about that is that I have fallen in love with playwrights. I fall in love with them. I read a play and I marvel about how someone can write something so human. And the only role for an actor to do is trying to make that as true and as realized as someone wrote it, because I've written things, and it's very hard to have somebody speak your words, I know. And I just try and do the best job, and I never will, that's the thing, because it lives in someone else's imagination. But it's a wonderful art, and it's a feeling that I think, and everybody, you know, has these moments of success or greatness, and even when you're, you know, a business person and you maybe give a speech or you hit a great number or you hit a mark that you really love, or you finally get to Broadway, if you ever get to Broadway, or if you're a sports star and you hit that last second shot, you know. God, any time I watch, like, buzzer beaters, it's like the most exhilarating thing ever. You know, when you're a kid, you're playing basketball, and you count down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you shoot it right at the last second, and it goes in, and for some reason, that gratification of doing something so profound in a moment, making a moment happen, I think is a beautiful thing that transcends all human life.
I agree. I'm really fascinated. I want to play it back and see if I got it right.
Okay. Should we press stop and then...
No.
Oh.
No, I'm going to do it and they can hear it.
Okay.
You created this character, and you and your friends created this skit. You said this wonderful thing. You said, I woke up on stage having sung it, and the sense I got was that you became so much the character that for a moment you weren't actually Benjamin, you were the character. Is that wrong?
It's not wrong. I will say this, though, that's always a... Okay, it's like you orgasm, right?
Yeah.
It's like you orgasm and then a part of you dies. You literally, people are dying. You kill. It's semen, it's an egg, you know, it's all dead. Anytime I talk about theater, anytime I talk about things that aren't progressive or things to make happen or change, I hate living in the past. I hate actually, not saying that I don't like talking about, you know, high school or these beginning moments, but something is lost then, because putting words to something that is a feeling, you know, communication,
it changes it.
And communication is such a huge thing of everyone, you know. Communication and language is the biggest thing, and sometimes, you know, you just don't need words. But I will say this, that I do know there was something in this moment of being a complete subconscious commitment, that I knew that it was fun, I knew what it was, but I lost myself. I let go.
Yeah.
And I think that there are techniques that try to get artists to that point, as such as Andre Malayev Babel, who teaches the technique that he teaches. And it's an interesting technique of clearing and letting go and green lighting. It is impulsive. It is a focus and a clarity of pure commitment. I think that people use it in different ways. I think that everybody, you know, from all the training that I've ever had, it's you don't dwell in it, you don't sit in it, you just let it be, and you practice what you practice, and you just keep moving. But naming it is death. Naming it, you know what I mean? In a way, I'm just saying.
No, I understand.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like naming it. Naming something is kind of like. I always think of painters, really great painters. I was thinking about this a couple days ago, that like, if you're a painter and you paint something on the wall, I don't understand painters that have an idea of what to paint, paint it, and then paint by numbers in a way, and then they're done. I like artists who write their name on a canvas, and then they add to it, and then they make a landscape, and then they keep building and building, so you've got a fucking... an inch of paint on your canvas that is something that when they are done,
they're done.
They let it go. And it's not that they decide, all right, I'm going to do one more. They don't decide it. It's the same with anything. It's you just do it, and in that moment, it's finished. It's not, I'm going to decide to... Well, I mean, we're not going to go on sex, but, I mean, talk about if you're like, all right, I'm going to have an orgasm now instead of just having it.
Letting it go. I'm really interested in the ability to submerge so deeply into the art that it's automatic pilot almost.
Mm-hmm. And okay. The beautiful thing, just to say, comment of that, is that that Andre said, musicians love to play scales. Some can just pick up an instrument and go because of a certain intuition. But an actor, I think, does have to do the same thing. I think he is correct that you need to practice. You need to work on your craft. Yeah.
So here we have you in high school having a profound experience that seems to say to you, this might be something I'd like to do. Do you then know that, I mean, do you make a decision then, I'd like to be an actor, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to pursue acting, or you still hadn't done it?
Well, my senior year, I was in the senior play with, you know, the kids that were actors, and it was a learning experience, that's for sure. It was really fun. I played the mayor. Hey, it was fun, though. It was a lot of fun. I just remember being so nervous. I mean, it was tough. There was all these people that knew what they were doing, and I had never been on stage before, and it was something, it wasn't something that I created. It was something that I was playing, so it was new and fun and different. But it was a role that I didn't even know really how to grasp. I just kind of almost saw those lines on a paper because I was trying to make them my own, but, you know, I didn't really know what at that point, I guess. But after high school, I went to a school in Utica, and I pursued theater there while playing lacrosse, too.
So did you know that you wanted to be an actor at this point, or do you not?
I think I did. I think I really, I don't know. You know, I don't.
It's like you passed some line, but you didn't notice.
No,
it looks like.
I never consciously said. It just kind of happened, and I don't know. It's something that I found organically with friends, and just through just kind of my own nature of being a kid, and the support to some degree that came from, you know, just being a goofy kid. I knew that I wanted to make people laugh too. That was the main. That's how I wanted. In class, I was such an asshole because I would make teachers. I mean, they liked me because maybe I was nice, but I wanted to make people laugh. I tried to be a class clown. You know, I tried to be goofy and because I valued people. I valued, you know, having people. You know, enjoy themselves, you know.
This isn't true for you, but it sounds like you wanted to have an impact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
So you go to school, you go to college, right? And you're playing lacrosse, and you're studying acting. There's an act. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what your degree is in, or you.
Yes. Yeah. It was a theater major. Yeah. Yeah.
And your parents, they think this is a good idea?
I don't really know what they thought at that point. I think they just was glad that I wasn't drinking too much and driving. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I think they were just, you know, they wanted me to find myself.
Right. They weren't saying, acting, are you crazy?
No, not necessarily, but there has been a moment recently that I talked to them because they've seen me on stage, they've seen me in life now, and they support me. I think that there was a point when they were like, I don't know.
Right.
But I'm not sure when and what, and I don't really care.
And they, no, of course not. No, and well, apparently they didn't lay it on you too heavily, whatever they were doing.
No, my mom definitely, though, of course, wanted me to get great grades in high school. Whose parent doesn't?
Right.
And she definitely always wanted me to study psychology. She wanted me to become a psychiatrist because I think that she knew that I was a sensitive person to some degree and wanted to be, I was a good friend for certain, you know, people in my life, and I was open to people.
She thought you'd make a good therapist.
Yeah, she was like, oh, here's a way to make money. Go ahead, go for it. So that was what she wanted me to do.
I see. Yeah. Okay, so you're just going to heal people from the stage, that's all.
Yeah, well, also, aside from the things that I put in their drinks before the show. Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, so you graduate from college, mm-hmm. and now you've got a degree in theater. And did you go right from there to here?
Well, I went to... I left Utica. I came back home. I went to a community college for a year. And I was in one show in Utica. I was mostly playing lacrosse and doing other things. And then met a lot of people through that experience. And then I went to the community college and I said, all right, I'm going to finish my associate's degree. That's when I became a theater major. I met the theater teacher, Catherine Bacon. And that was a moment when I realized that I wanted to do this for education. I wanted to go. I wanted to do it. And I didn't really know what the heck that meant. I just wanted to pursue it. And I was in some neat things. She put me in things there. I was in a cut version of The Zeus Story by Edward Albee, and in Rumors, and a couple like a cabaret night. And then from there I went to Binghamton University, and I auditioned, and that was really neat. I love Binghamton. Binghamton University is it holds so dear to my heart. I came in as a transfer with a bunch of other transfers, friends of mine. It was just a wonderful time. And I auditioned and went crazy and one of the best teachers. I mean, Binghamton, I don't think, is really known for their theater, but the fact that I found such a beautiful... beautiful training in it, and these teachers that are so passionate and committed and brilliant that I fell in love. And thankfully, they cast me and put me in shows. And that exposure and that experience truly made me who I am today because of the roles that I was given and because of the training. Anne Brady, you know, learning what she, Linklater and Chekhov and Tom Kremer, I could just keep rattling names off, you know, Tom Kremer and Michael Toomey, you know, and Don Burrows and, you know, these teachers who all were so different, but all I could see their common goal, and really just a wonderful group of people, artists that were ready to create and there's a lot of opportunities. Yeah.
Well, and it sounds like they saw it in you, and they encouraged it, nurtured it, developed it, supported it.
The thing was, too, that was beautiful about the program, I guess, the undergraduate program. They also have a grad program, too, but lots of, I would say a few people in the class, the classes that I were in, weren't necessarily wanting to be actors for the rest of their life. I mean, they were just taking these classes. So that was really neat, to be in a class with people that were just expressing themselves, mm-hmm. and then other people that really kind of wanted to be there, that had places to change and grow and evolve as the artist that they thought they were. So that openness on both spectrums was really a beautiful thing to watch over the course of 2 years. They might have seen something. I just think that I was imaginative and very eager to learn and to just express myself.
So at this period, you are saying to yourself, acting, that's what I think I want to do with my life.
I guess so.
You know, it's so interesting to me because, I think you're a terrific actor. And,
well, thanks, Lynn.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, and it's striking, to me anyway, that you sort of slid into it, is what it sounds like. I mean, it doesn't sound like it, and you certainly didn't, you know, as a young man, you certainly weren't saying, oh, I have to do this, this is what I have to do.
No.
You know, it evolved, and it evolved, and you kept putting one foot in front of the other, sort of, and here you are.
This art form is, I think it's an ever learning experience, and I think once you get settled, I mean, maybe that's just where I'm at right now in life, that I don't need to, I don't need to be tense. I think I don't need to say, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to be the best. I think the way to go through life, I think for me at this point, is to be humble, to be definitely ready when an audition happens. I'm not saying that I don't, you know, want it, but if I'm going in to just audition or to be cool or to get a job, I'm not an artist, I'm a businessman, and a lot of people now are business people, and I think that's great. The way that I am right now is where I am, and I'm making the change to become that too, mm-hmm. to become more, you know, because you have to be able to promote yourself. You need to be able to say, you know, this is who I am, and, you know, especially when the world is kind of unknown in this art form, especially when you go, you know, where I move next, you know, if I, you know, go to New York, some people can figure me out right if they go online and read some stuff or listen to whatever, but anybody else, you're a known name, and to become a name isn't necessarily important, just to be known that you can create this world in art, you know, to be able to be an actor as a sustainable life, you know, like a, you know, to be a to be an artist who can be, to can eat off their own art, I think is,
right.
Is quite profound.
So we'll watch and we'll see what becomes of you.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. So, talk a little bit about 4,000 Miles.
4,000 Miles. It's a great, very well, beautifully composed piece by Amy Herzog, who has written this family comedy drama about Leo, who I am, who bikes across the country from west to east, and stumbles at 3 o'clock in the morning into his step-grandmother's apartment in Greenwich Village, who they haven't seen each other for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it's a play about...
How old is he in the play?
He's 21 years old. I'm 21 years old. And the grandmother is 91. So it's just a little bit of an age gap. And yeah, it's about their relationship. It's about them growing as characters, and not just characters as in a play, but character. I mean,
yeah.
Their character changes. These two people that have been alone for a little while. And then there's other two characters too. Three, actually. My sister, Lily. Amanda, this girl that Leo actually picks up mm-hmm. outside.
Right.
And my girlfriend, Beck. So it's a very neat play. It's a wonderful play about grandmothers and grandsons and just about these people that believe so wholeheartedly in how they want to shape the world and what they believe in. And, you know, being a young man or young woman, like you said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be great. I'm going to be the best. He believes so much of what he wants the world to be. And she, as well, did. Mm-hmm. An ex, you know, kind of communist, mm-hmm. Marxist, you know, free love kind of woman who, you know, I don't know if you know, but like, actually, Lois Markle, who plays the grandma, told me that some group, some communist party or something started in Greenwich Village. And so it's real. I mean, Amy Herzog mm-hmm. wrote this about, her grandmother. So mm-hmm. it's really, it's a great play.
How was it to work with the director?
Taya Elagic is fantastic. She went to school with Amy at Yale and directed a lot of Amy's first couple plays. Amy writes what she knows. You know, that's what I've come to learn, and I think that that's important. And I think Taya works in a very beautiful way. She allows us to find it, mm-hmm. and then shapes it, and then she's very aware, and nice because she's a female too. I've worked with a lot of male directors, which is excellent. But it's unique. It's been unique to have a female director, mm-hmm. And I really love it. And she was great. And yeah, I think every director is different. Every experience is different. You got to go in with an open mind and open heart, and be ready to change. You know.
Did you audition for this? Did they?
I didn't. But through the Cosmos, I did, really, because you know they're casting a season for your third year, and they saw my work change from first to second. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, they thought that I was a good fit. And
you were.
Well, thanks.
You were. Are you kidding?
And so I'm honored and just trying to do the play its justice, you know.
So, Leo mm-hmm. is a very different character from the character you played in other desert cities.
Oh, really?
You don't think so?
No, I'm joking. No, they are. They definitely are two totally different dudes, but similarities too. I mean, in different facets, but they're different.
Were okay. Was one of them easier or?
Was it easier or harder? I don't know. I think it was. I will say this, that I like things that are tangible in the process. And so I haven't been to LA in a while, so I had to really do some of my own work with familiarizing myself with, you know, California.
Because other desert cities
was
takes
based
place
in California,
California,
and I'm a California kid. I mean, I wrote on the back of my script, "Trip is California. I am California." I mean, he says it, and I believed it, and I feel like it was important to love where you are.
Yeah, so you do that work to prepare.
Oh, sure.
Have you had an opportunity to do very much singing and dancing?
To try and to become my idol Gene Kelly,
yes,
or
exactly,
Donald
right,
O'Connor?
Right.
No, but I kick myself, literally, because I don't have that, but not since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of singing and dancing. That's something that I will need to do. I will need to push that more on my own, if that's something that I really want to do more of. Someone said, you know, to always have a song to be able to sing is always important.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to dance, you've got to be able to move as an actor. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you're a film actor or not. I think that, you know, of course, the body is the most important thing. It is you. And also what you feed it. It's so fascinating when, you know, you really realize what you put into your body, it really get out, you know. It's profound. But no, I haven't. I really haven't had that much of an opportunity. Although we did have a workshop 2 years in a row with David Brunetti that we got to act a song.
Right.
And I picked two disastrous pieces, but they went over okay. But
what did you pick?
I picked a song by Boys to Men for my first one because of the lyrics and also because of...
Which one?
It's so hard to say goodbye.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was great because it's sung a cappella and I sang it with piano. It was not a fine choice. And then I sang Mr. Cellophane my second year. I was in Chicago over that summer, but I didn't play that part. I really loved that song and I wanted to do it. But the way that I did it was very impulsive and kind of crazy. But I really, who knows? I mean, I love singing. I really do. And I think that I've always wanted to be able to sing and dance like those guys that I used to see, and Fred Astaire. And I mean, my first year here, I can't even tell you how much Dean Martin I watched. For some reason, I didn't know who he was, really, mm-hmm. you know? And because of the ridiculous, you know, the availability of the internet, I just went to town, and I watched so much Dean Martin.
What did you watch on...
Just his show.
The show?
And
he was
his
wonderful.
Roasts, and I just watched this guy that was wasted or not wasted half the time, but was such a schmoozer, and was so fun. And, you know, those guys, the Rat Pack, it's a dying mentality, I think, and I really hope that it never goes away, or it's reincarnated in some other facet, which it is, but, you know, not that level of greatness.
Jerry Lewis wrote a book called Dean and Me.
Oh, no, I didn't know
it's
that.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, for
it's
real?
Wonderful.
Oh, I'll read it.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. I won't tell you anything else. It's real. You'll love it.
Okay.
And he talks a lot about how extraordinary Dean was.
Hmm.
And,
cool.
And I, you know, after I read the book, I actually listened to it too. I got an audiobook of it.
Wow.
Which I think Jerry is reading.
I was going to say,
He's reading it. And I also then, whenever I've had an opportunity either to watch or to listen to Dean, I listen differently now, you know. His son died, was very sad for the last part of his life.
Think about other desert cities in that fashion.
That's right.
How hard it is for a family to jump back after right. you lose a son, and the oldest son, you know. And that's such a truthful... it's such an honest thing, because people, even in this community, relate, and even people that, you know, someone dies, you know, that maybe you're here and someone's in LA and they die and you never have a chance, and then they don't know what happened to their body, who knows, and
That's
then you
right.
go, wait a minute, are they still alive? I mean, it's weird.
It's a very powerful play.
I didn't know that about him, yeah. Dean Martin. Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other question that I ask is, would you say anything about what it's like to have given as much of your life as you have to pursuing theater and acting?
The ballsy question. no regrets, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this story. I had a professor... I went into his office. We were talking about grad school. It was grad school. It was. It was me getting going here. And he said to me, he said, Ben, when you get the chance, I want you to go get a glove, and I want you to bring it back. And I said, okay. I said, now? And he said, okay, yeah. So, I think he didn't say anything after that. And then I walked out of the door, and a girl walked by me, and she was putting on gloves immediately. And I said, excuse me, hey, can I borrow one of those gloves? My professor needs it just for a second. She looked at me like,
oh, right.
Insane.
Right.
Like, what am I going to do with this glove? And I was like, no. She was like, what do you want it for? And I was like, well, I don't know. My professor wants to borrow it. And she was like, no, I have class. You know, I got to go. Da, 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 da. She left. So that was the first test. Whatever that was, realizing that whatever that was,
right.
make it up in your own mind. So then I walk down the hall with a quick step because I need to get this glove. It's a mission. And I was very... goofy, whatever anybody said, I was going to say yes, and I was going to go do. And especially because of his stature, and because of his presence, and because of what he had been through as an artist already so far, and how he taught his class, how he expressed himself, how he directed, which was a reason I went to Binghamton. I knew that I had to get a glove. So I walked down, and I met this other girl, and I said, hey, she was putting on gloves, and I said, can I borrow one of these? And she goes, what? And I was like, I'm sorry, this is so goofy. And then I explained it.
Right.
I said, hey, my professor, and I dropped my tone. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, you know, I would really love it if I could just borrow this glove just for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Could you, you know, let me borrow it? And she goes, well, I kind of have class. And I said, well, hey, I'll bring it up to you. What class are you in? I know this building like the back of my hand. I walk around all the time. She said, okay. I said, okay. I'll bring it up to upstairs, you know, third floor is a 3-story building. I said, okay, great. I went back into the office, and I gave him the glove. And he stood up with the glove in his hand, and he dropped it on the floor. And he looked me dead in the eye, and he said, if you pick up this glove, you're not only making a commitment to yourself, but to me, and to your art, and to the world, that you will never have any regrets.
Oh my goodness.
And I looked at him. My heart started to beat.
Yeah.
And I picked it up and I gave it back to him. And then I said, okay. And he didn't say anything. And I left.
My goodness.
I think that it's a hard thing to grasp because you need to censor yourself in a lot of daily life. And I'm not saying that I've lived so truthfully to that mission. But it sure changed me, and every time I think about it, especially now, it reaffirms that this art is powerful, and it'll never end. It happens all over the world. If I make it to Broadway, or if I make it to the south of France, or if I'm alone in my basement, I hope and pray that I can survive and keep creating in one way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. I love acting. I love the art form. I think that is so vast, from Bob Wilson to Marina Abramovich, to any clown you see on the street, to farces, to the Book of Mormon, to whatever you see. It's all art. And even that's only like American and English.
Mm-hmm.
You go to India, you go to anywhere, you know, to the middle of South America, to Africa. Theater, storytelling is crucial. And it's a human quality. It's a quality of humans to share, to listen, to... I mean, these beat poets, Bobby Dylan, who, you know, I mean, it's like Allen Ginsberg, these guys, that's the art, that's it. That's what I grew up with, that's what I love. But I know that it's not stagnant, it's not tense, it's not one thing. It's a lot. And I think that as an actor, and any artist, you need to be open. But there's a lot of artists that stick very true to what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I will find that, but I don't need to know what it is. Like you said,
mm-hmm.
sometimes some actors don't know what they're doing to an audience, and how could they?
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You just do it for them. My professor, Michael Toomey, said in a way that we're the catharsis for the world, these actors. And I believe that to a degree, that I feel that, you know, if I can have one moment... If there can be just one moment that you take away, that's okay with me.
Mm-hmm. It's a good place to stop. Thank you very much, Benjamin Williamson.
Thank you. Thank you.
When you listen to Ben, what you hear is someone who has the faith that he can continue to put one foot in front of the other, that he can continue to follow what seems right, and that he will get to where he needs to go, that he doesn't have to know up front, that he doesn't have to decide up front, that he doesn't have to make some kind of decision to which he must then rigidly hold. This idea that he can be who he is now and become who he will become later, because he has the sense that it's okay for him to be who he is at any given time. And of course, that's the point of the Lynn Show. Believing that you can be all that you are at any moment in time. So, if this interview has interested you or inspired you to look at, to ask the question, am I fully myself at this moment in time? Do I believe that I will be who I am meant to be as I am becoming it? Or am I giving myself orders about who I ought to be, have to be, should have been? Or worse than that, am I criticizing myself for who I have been, what I haven't done? Are you curious, interested? Would you like to have that sense? I am who I am at this moment, and it is perfect. It is correct. It is enough. Well, if you want to talk to me about that, as I said earlier, you can go on up to my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com. And up there you will find a button to email me. You can ask me any questions you like about what I talk about or about your own life. You can read the article that I wrote about therapy on the phone, psychotherapy on the go. You can listen to the first chapter of my book, which I am reading on the website. The book is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can listen to all of the previous shows, including this one, and they're all up there on podcast. So, as always, I hope that you got something that you can use from this show. Something that, as I said before, inspired you. Something that made you laugh the way it made me laugh. Something that you learned that you didn't know. Something that triggered a memory, maybe. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week. Same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseen.